Welcome to episode 2 of season 3 of the Roots of American Music podcast. My name is Clint Holly, and I'll be your host today. Presented in conjunction with the Knight Foundation, the GAR Foundation, and Roots of American Music, this season is called the Akron Heritage Music Project, where we explore the diverse history of Akron, Ohio through music and stories. In today's episode, which I call the Howard Street Shuffle, we explore the rich history of jazz music in Akron, Ohio, and how this art form was one of the first to start breaking down racial barriers in America. We have two great guests lined up. The first is Joe Mossbrook, a journalist and historian whose rich knowledge of jazz history lends the backbone to our story. Our second guest today is an immensely talented young man named Theron Brown, who's a jazz performer, he's a teacher, and he's the founder of the Rubber City Jazz and Blues Festival, which represents a great complement to the stories that Joe tells us earlier in the podcast. Theron reaches out to the future and tells us what is on the horizon for jazz music in Akron, Ohio. Also included in this podcast is music from the Tommy Lehman Quintet, which Theron Brown is a member of. They were originally scheduled to do a live public performance as part of this grant, but COVID destroyed all of that. And we retooled and started streaming all of our performances from the Akron Recording Company. So the music that you hear today is archived on the Roots of American Music Facebook page. If you would like to see the complete performance, an hour of great jazz music, please visit the Facebook page of Roots of American Music and look for the video of the Tommy Lehman Quintet. You won't be disappointed. So let's set the stage. Let's go back in time and let's start talking to Joe Mossbrook about the history of jazz music in Akron, Ohio.
My name is Joe Mossbrook. I'm a retired news reporter for NBC News. And for more than 30 years now, I've been doing a weekly radio feature for the NPR station in Cleveland, WCPN, on Cleveland jazz history, trying to connect the various aspects of jazz in Cleveland with jazz history generally. And this has been going on for more than 30 years. And a few years back, some of the information from these radio series ended up in a book I wrote on Cleveland jazz history, which is available on the internet in its entirety, although the book itself is out of print now. It was published by the Northeast Ohio Jazz Society.
Let's start around 1940. What's the state of jazz music, and then what's happening in a city like Akron, Ohio in that time period?
Well, can we go back even farther?
Absolutely.
Akron,
yes.
The history, you can take it back to the 20s, actually.
Okay, let's do that then.
I mean, people like Fletcher Henderson, who probably more than anybody invented the big band style of jazz, was playing in Akron in 1921.
Wow.
And any number of big bands came through Akron, playing at places like Summit Beach Park, East Market Gardens, the Akron Armory. In 1943, Duke Ellington played at the Akron Armory. And a singer with his band at that time was a gal named Dolores Parker. And she was singing with a band, and she later settled in Akron, in Fairlawn, actually.
Okay.
She married Gates Morgan, a doctor, and she lived there for years, and she also continued singing until, maybe 20 years ago.
When did Akron, in your opinion, see the peak of its jazz prominence? Prior to World War II, during World War II, after World War II, and what changes in the jazz world maybe prompted movement in other directions?
North Howard Street was popular mainly in the late 40s through the 50s and early 60s.
Okay.
And the jazz clubs there, for the most part, were not programming national names, but local names. You mentioned some earlier, Jimmy Noel, the saxophonist, Punchy Atkinson, who incidentally later played with Les Montgomery and Freddie Hubbard.
Wow, okay.
Newman Williams, a bass player who was very popular. He came to Cleveland quite a bit. Pee Wee Carter, Clifford Johnson was one. They were not also, getting back to the racial things, they were not all black musicians. One of the musicians on Howard Street was Roland Polucci.
Yes, yes, right.
Who later headed the jazz program at the University of Akron, a piano player, and he also later led the Cleveland Jazz Orchestra.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He tells stories about his friend, Newman Williams, got him to come over and play piano at some of the clubs along Howard Street.
Was there a move away from dancing and more to presentation in jazz at that time period, or did they stay mostly clubs where people went for, you know, dancing and entertainment?
Yeah, I don't think these little clubs along Howard Street, I was not there, but I don't think they were for dancing. You know, you went to the Armory or Land O'Lakes or East Market Gardens to go dancing.
Right.
These were small clubs where people went and drank and listened to jazz. I mean, some of these, for, you know, over 20 years, there were usually 7 or 8 or 9 clubs operating along Howard Street. I mean, some went and some came in. It varied at times, like jazz clubs do. But hey, places like Benny Rivers, which somebody called the Jazz Palace of Akron, the Hi-Hat, the Cosmopolitan, the Green Turtle, the Tropicana, the Rhythm Bar, the Silver Leaf, the Pacific Club, these were all operating right there in that one little area of Howard Street.
Wow.
And musicians were playing there every night, almost every night, and they were attracting integrated crowds from around the area, even though it was essentially an African-American area.
Now, people that were going out to see jazz at that time, would you say that it was a working class crowd? Was it, you know, a college educated crowd at that time period? What's the demographics of people that are listening to jazz and going to see these kind of performances?
Well, I don't have any data on that. I don't know if anybody ever collected it, but I've heard stories that it attracted a lot of college age kids.
Right. Okay.
They were interested in it. And a lot of older people who remembered the jazz and wanted to stay with it.
Right.
I don't know how you can really pinpoint what the crowds were, but many of the musicians remember a lot of college-age white kids going to hear these jazz groups at the clubs.
That's very interesting. Then how do you think that kind of ties into, you know, you've talked about how, you know, jazz is one of the first things in our culture that's integrated. You have these college kids going to see these performances. Then how do you think that helps in the 1960s feed into something like the civil rights movement? Like, is it perceived as something? Does it get the credit that it deserves in terms of breaking down those barriers that you've already spoken to?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that it did. You know, it's certainly not enough, but for an awful lot of white kids, some of the first black people they became aware of or got to know were musicians.
Right.
And they got to know them because they appreciated their art.
Right.
That suddenly here is some common ground on which they can come together and appreciate each other.
And when you speak about college, was jazz something that was actively taught in college curriculums at that time? Or when did jazz become more of an academic thing in schools?
I think that's a fairly recent thing. I mean, fairly recent, 20 or 30 years or
okay.
so.
Okay.
That most of these musicians who were playing in the 40s and 50s were not college educated.
Right.
I mean, they didn't go to Berkeley,
Right. It was Akron a segregated city? I've read that a place like the Matthews Hotel was like the only place that would accept traveling African-American musicians. What's kind of your take on that?
Well, obviously, the migration was prompted by jobs in the North, jobs in Akron, just like jobs in Cleveland, and it prompted this big migration. And Akron, like Cleveland, was heavily segregated during this period, through the 40s and 50s. The people turned out of whatever race to hear good music. I mean, you can go back to Benny Goodman in the 30s when he had Lionel Hampton and T. Teddy Wilson playing with his trio. This was a full decade before Jackie Robinson played Major League Baseball.
Right.
I have this theory that jazz began breaking down racial lines long before almost any other aspect of our society.
Let's talk a little bit about the decline of the Akron area and urban renewal. When did that start?
In the 60s, mainly. That they pretty much leveled Howard Street. I mean, let's say the only thing left there is the old Ritz Theater building.
Right.
Which has been some kind of nightclub for years, apparently. All right, all of that you listed, I think, is part of it. A big thing, there were any number of fairly small jazz clubs I know in Cleveland and in Akron as well that would have big-name national artists come through and play for a week for a couple hundred dollars.
Okay.
I mean, you would get people like Earl Garner or Dizzy Gillespie. They'd be at some little club playing for a few hundred bucks a week. But then in the 60s, some of these artists discovered that they could play at a much bigger venue and get much, much more money. And these little clubs that presented the national names just quickly faded out.
Okay.
You don't get that anymore. I mean, today, when you get a big name, he's going to be playing at E.J. Thomas. He's not going to be playing at Sammy's Bar down in the corner.
Right. There's a monument down there dedicated to the Matthews Hotel and Howard Street in general. Were you involved with that at all? And can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and what the driving force behind that was?
Yeah, maybe we ought to go back a little bit.
Sure.
And explain what the Matthews Hotel was.
Sure.
That essentially this was the Black Hotel of Akron. It opened in 1925 by a guy named George Matthews, who had come north from the south with the migration, and he opened a hotel there along Howard Street near the railroad tracks, a hotel with 55 guest rooms. And this hotel lasted until 1978.
Wow.
And as you mentioned, all the touring big-name black musicians stayed at the Matthews Hotel. People like Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald, Lionel Hampton, Dizzy Gillespie. They all stayed at George Matthews Hotel, which was just a few doors away from the string of nightclubs. And very often these national touring musicians who were playing at the time at places like the Palace Theater, the Akron Armory, the East Market Gardens, or Summit Beach Park, they would sometimes go over to the Howard Street jazz clubs and sometimes sit in with the local musicians.
Right.
Now, Matthews Hotel was big, but it was torn down in the 60s in the name of urban renewal, and there's not much left there, except for the former Ritz Theater building, which is nearby. And there was, in 2001, an historic marker was set up, marking the Matthews Hotel. And then, in 2011, a monument that was designed and created by Miller Horns, an Akron artist,
right,
was established and set up.
Now, what was Miller's connection to the Akron art scenes or jazz scene?
Well, he obviously was a big jazz fan, and he was also a very respected artist in a number of areas in Akron. And this was a project that he worked on for years. He thought something should be done to remember the old Matthews Hotel. And he designed this thing and went out and raised money to build it. And this was a major part of his life for maybe a decade.
And you said that came to fruition in the early 2010s then?
It was, I think it was a record in 2011.
Okay.
But there's no question that Akron has a long and rich history in jazz.
Right.
And after a down period, is coming back with places like Blue Jazz Plus and the Rubber City Jazz and Blues Festival. And I think honoring that long history, there is a comeback in Akron now.
This is a tune I wrote for house I moved out in June in Highland Square. If you're familiar with that neighborhood, you'll know these roads. This is called Belvedere and Payne.
You are listening to the sounds of the Tommy Lehman Quintet, recorded live at the Akron Recording Company and live streamed via the Roots of American Music Facebook page. I encourage anybody listening to this to go to the Rome Facebook page, give us a like, and find this performance and watch the entire thing. It's great, great quality music. If you like the page, you'll also be notified when we go live on the rest of these Akron Heritage Music Project performances, and you can watch from the safety of your own house. Let's move to the present and the future now. I sat down with Theron Brown before he performed with the Tommy Lehman Quintet and talked to him for quite a while about jazz, the process of jazz, his place in Akron jazz, and what the future looks like for Akron and jazz. And it's all very exciting. Theron's a talented guy, and we had a great time talking to each other. So let's learn a lot more about Theron Brown right now.
My name is Theron Brown, and I first moved up here in about 2005 for school at the University of Akron.
Okay.
To get into jazz music. Initially, I just wanted to get better at gospel music
because that's
kind of my roots. Once I got the bug, I kind of set up camp here and I saw the legacy and the history and wanted to be a part of that.
Okay. And you're involved with academics in Akron?
Yeah. I work with Open Tone Music,
okay,
which they provide educational services in the music portion for underserved communities. So we have a lot of students actually from this area, Cleveland, and even out of the country, like Trinidad. Due to pandemic stuff going on.
Right, now everything's online. Your classroom is a computer now.
Right. I also teach at Kent State University.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And do you teach jazz?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. What's your curriculum that you teach?
Fundamentals of jazz piano, theory 1 and 2.
Okay.
And I run combos and teach private lessons.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So take us back. Well, what was your influences and what led you to jazz piano?
Yeah. So I grew up playing, a lot of B3 organ and piano at my dad's church. He's a pastor. So I always grown up being around that sound and the music, and we had a piano at the house.
Right.
So it's kind of just in the culture that way.
And you said you're a transplant to Akron, so where are you from originally?
Oh, yeah, that's important. Zanesville,
yeah.
Ohio.
Zanesville?
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Not exactly a jazz hotbed. There's a pottery museum in Zanesville,
exactly.
In the public library, I think. Me and my wife have been there.
Yep, that's about it. The Y Bridge, and then after that, you've seen it all.
Isn't Zane Grey the author from Zanesville, too,
yeah,
I think?
The
Western author?
That's
okay.
Right.
So how old were you? So you came up here for college then. So you're out of high school. You're looking to do what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And you moved to Akron.
Right, right. Okay. And at first I was playing viola
through
high school. And, you know, I just gravitated towards piano. I think I had a scholarship and stuff to go to Ohio State for viola. But it just didn't, you know, resonate.
Right.
So I went, I had a teacher that came to my high school for a master class or something. And I would always play before rehearsal, warming up and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, gospel and jazz, it all comes from the same pot, blues.
Right.
It's just feel good music.
Right.
And he would hear it, and he's like, man, have you ever checked out jazz? I'm like, not really, you know, it's the devil's music. The only thing I listened to was gospel at the time.
Right.
And classical, whatever. But the next day he brought me a book and a CD of Thelonious Monk.
Okay.
And the book had all of his tunes in it. And the album was one of the essential albums.
Right.
So it had a lot of variety on it. And I was hooked.
Yeah.
You know, I heard the rhythm and the harmony. Had no clue what was going on. Still don't know what's going on.
Right.
I mean, Monk's the man. So but that caught my attention. I was like, I got to go to school for jazz because I can use that to increase my musicality.
Right. Now, you mentioned playing B3 in church also. Mm-hmm. Do you listen to any of the classic organ jazz guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Love Jimmy, of course. But one who I actually get to talk to frequently now, who we've had to the Jazz Fest, one of my favorite B3 players, is Joey DeFrancesco.
Okay.
And it's funny because I met him when I first moved here. That was the first concert I saw in Cleveland.
Really?
At the Manchester.
Okay.
And I saw him play. And that, it's just funny that, you know, a few years back, you know, he's coming in to play at our jazz
now
festival
he's
here.
Now he's one of your peers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's,
you know,
it's kind
of
cool, yeah.
Text him and, yeah, it's a nice little relationship.
What do you think it was about Akron from, let's say, 1920 to 1960?
Yeah.
What's going on in Akron that really fuels this, like, whole thing?
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, always politics that go into it. And
right.
Look at that era of what was going on all over the country. Our culture, black culture, was starting to become a kind of like a release,
right.
A safety net, not only for black folks, but, you know, they were even mingling with white folks as well.
Right.
Which was the point of our music and the point of the beauty there. And when you look at Akron, we have this separation with 59 and kind of how the areas flip. You know, the Firestone area was very probably more progressive, I'll say.
Okay.
Whereas in here, it may have been more party vibe, maybe drugs going around. Let's
right.
just be real about it.
Right.
So it wasn't maybe the safest place, right? But that's, you know, when we're looking at the 1920s, that's where the music was. And I imagine that's kind of how it was here. Now, the special thing, as we move on, the music came out of that and was able to live in places like clubs,
right.
Where people could pay to listen to the music and, you know, also have a good time, party, drink, eat.
Right.
So when that happened here, I believe, like, that's when musicians would come through as a circuit.
Well, let's talk about the festival a little bit. To give mm-hmm. it, give me the history, the background on the festival and how that got founded and kind of what its goal is and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, like you all, we are part of the Knight Foundation clan as well,
nice.
Grantees. We won back in 2015,
okay.
I believe. And the idea kind of sprung from a group that I took a trip with, Knight Foundation folks and some Akron City folks that wanted to explore other Knight Foundation cities to see how they were developing
oh, cool.
the arts districts, yes.
Right.
And other functions too. So what I took from that, I was like, okay, I'm on this trip. What's my purpose? They didn't really fill me in too much. Right. I'm guessing I'm the only musician here, so maybe right. I should be thinking maybe about the scene and creatively.
Right.
So we saw, for me, we went to Pittsburgh and Detroit, and those two cities, you know, they have big music legacies. Oh, my yeah. God. And getting to meet some of the people there and all, people that I already knew, I was like, we have this same vibe
yeah.
in Akron and just in Northeast Ohio in general. It's just that Midwest swing, I like to call it.
That Rust Belt, yeah. industrial, yeah, thing that it's all in our DNA.
That's right.
Right.
So they have these programs for music. And again, my lane is more the jazz and blues area. So I saw that they had a festival and educational components that went along with it. And that's,
right.
of course, what I believe in most, especially for the youth, because that's the only way the legacy and stuff will continue to live.
Sure.
So, yeah, I thought, okay, there's going to start this grant process. And I talked to Kyle Kudachev and he said, yeah, man, just do it. I'm pretty sure you'll win this. And, man, when we did, the city jumped on board and
yeah.
we got it started. We were a bit ambitious. Me looking back now, we should have took a year and maybe did it the next year.
Right.
So we won. We found out in December, and we're like, "Let's do it in August." So yeah, you can count on your fingers how.
Wow, how did that go?
Oh, it went incredible.
Did it? Oh, it's good.
But me looking back now, I would have like, "No, what are you thinking? Like, don't no, take right. your time." You know.
Right.
But I was a little younger then, and I think it did need to happen. Kind of looking back.
Right. Now, when you are looking at your roster and who you're going to book for the festival, what are some of the criteria that you kind of flip through to, yeah. you know, do you look for legacy artists? Do you look for young artists? I'm sure you look for a, yeah. you know, a combination. Is a certain percent local mm-hmm. and a certain percent from out of town? Tell yeah. us a little more about that process.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Yeah. This festival was to cater to, and still is, to cater to our musicians here.
Okay.
So it is locally influenced, and we even tried to put some of our groups maybe opening up for some of the headliners that we have come in, bigger names.
Right.
And also some of the bigger names use our players here, which
right.
is really cool.
Nice.
Because we do have some of the best musicians in the world. You heard it here. So yeah, as far as the ratio, we do focus on our folks here in Akron, mm-hmm. then we go to Cleveland, our homies over there. And
right.
then after that, we're all regional. We got people from Columbus and Cincinnati that
right.
come and attend and just play. Detroit, even. Pittsburgh.
Cool. In terms of genres, within kind of the jazz and blues realm, do you try and fill certain spots with genres? Because jazz and blues is such a huge
yeah,
umbrella.
Big umbrella.
Like, what do you look for? And if there's an educational component, do you tie some of those genres to an educational component?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with the genre thing. We try to let it be an artful thing. Like you said, jazz and blues is a big umbrella, but it's a foundational
right.
term, you
right.
know, that has changed. It changes generations.
Sure.
So exactly what you're saying, we try to mix it up with our legends here that we like to pay tribute to and definitely give them the platform to show us, you know, to learn from them that way.
Right.
And then also give our youth to explore and send us into the now and to the future.
Right.
The educational component comes in with Open Tone, which is our executive director, Chris Anderson. We are under the umbrella of them. So the children from that program are able to, and they're all from around the city.
Right.
But they're able to take, at this point, they would Zoom in and have a master class with some of these musicians.
Okay.
Or they would open for them and maybe start out the jazz festival.
Right.
You know, the kicker. So there's a lot of opportunities to have the musicians that come in and play with us even visit schools or sit in with those bands.
Right.
We've seen them come back and check out schools surrounding. So,
cool. Maybe now, the clubs that you book the... is there more than just, you know, blue jazz in Akron in terms of jazz clubs? Did you have to approach other places and kind of get them to buy into this also when you were putting this together?
Yeah, yeah, we would. And we try to do different things to help let's see, like feel the vibe of the venue.
Right.
So like at the Akron Art Museum, we would have
right.
Helen Welch and Joe Lehman on right. piano, singer and, you know, duo.
Right.
And it's just a nice, intimate crowd, perfect for the acoustics in there.
Acoustics, right.
You know, so it's still this jazz element, but, you know, Helen does pop songs too. So you're dancing in your seat and having a good time.
Right.
Whereas when you go to the library on their beautiful stage, which has a wonderful grand piano, I put two pianos in there. And we do a thing called Piano Palooza, and I get, because I play piano, you
right,
know.
Right, right. A little I gotta preferential have, treatment yeah, to the come keys on. There.
let me get a little selfish for the festival.
Right.
But I bring in some of my favorite pianists, and we just go at it for a couple hours.
Really?
And then we also use that stage for, like Chris Cole's brought Nine Lives in, which was a very serious piece of music. It's a four-movement piece. That was in dedication to the Charleston shooting that
oh,
happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So really, really deep. And that went over so well. And that was the right kind of venue and vibe
to present that. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, 2 o'clock-ish.
Right. That's not a bunch of people drinking right, and like right, getting right. rowdy. Right.
Yeah, man. So that's the program. Yeah. And then when we go into the evening at night, after all the main shows are done, say 10 o'clock hits, you can go down to Blue and hear Sammy De Leon and his right. orchestra, which is all Latin music. We clear out the floors.
Or let people cut it up. Yeah. Nice.
You go over to Musica, and we got more of a hip-hop vibe, yeah. dance thing going on, or a live band playing.
Right.
But it's a bunch of youthful folks going in.
Nice. You know? Is there an intersection in jazz and hip-hop currently? Like,
absolutely.
What's going on? I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
What's kind of going on in that realm?
Yeah, I think... Man, I have to say it's always kind of been there, even starting going back to like Q-Tip and, you know, MF Doom just passed, God rest his soul. But I think, yeah, today, even more so, I'm working with the artist now named Peach Curls, who I love his music. It's like, I can't even put a label on it, but it has elements of, you know, a right. lot of things. And he'll send me tracks and I lay stuff down on it and it might... You know, he's looking for that sound,
right.
maybe a more jazz type thing or.
And I guess there's always an element of spontaneity to hip hop, too, like
mm-hmm.
and improvisation. So, I mean, like yeah. there is like I see a natural kind of, you know, overlap there
in the rhythm
and
you know,
right.
the syncopation stuff, the kind of bouncing around.
Right.
Really reminds me of bebop for real.
There you go.
You know, right. you got this. 100 years apart almost.
right. yeah. Well, like you said, I mean, it's all about bringing that next generation in and like. Passing it on, you know?
Yeah.
When did you kind of realize that there's this academic component to it?
Yeah, so I think I looked at it as a way for me to get better.
Right.
Now, once I got into it, I saw that it was a tool, but I have to be creative in how I use it and
right.
how I want to personally enhance my own gift. So yeah, I was able to learn new scales and chords and all that stuff. Some of the stuff that I already was playing, I put names to it.
Right.
But yeah, once the music, and this is from kind of hearsay, I know a lot of musicians that say jazz is dead.
Right.
And what they mean by that is like when it was institutionalized, once you start trying to take the magic out of it, like
right.
Coltrane played Coltrane because he was Coltrane when Coltrane was Coltrane.
Right, yeah,
you
right.
know what I mean?
He represents a moment in time
yes.
of his personality
right.
and nobody else's, right.
And that evolved because right. if you listen to him when he was playing with Miles compared to the end of his life,
right.
Woo, it was like space science. He went straight to Jupiter, you know?
right, like, right.
And that's how... You know, life should be. You ascend and you
well,
transform.
Well, you don't ever stop changing.
You don't stop.
Like, right, because then
yes.
you're just kind of, then it is dead if
yes.
you stop. But if you don't stop, you know, you got somewhere
But think
to go.
About that. Yeah. It's the institutionalization. I can get a degree in jazz in 4 years.
Right.
And now I can get a master's degree and then I'm called a master.
Right.
I get a doctor and then I'm called a doctor.
Right.
I can name a ton of musicians who don't have any degrees. Who should be doctors of this music, you know.
Right.
So, and not to say that you do not go to school and study, but that's not where it stops.
You right.
have, when I was in school, I did so much more. I didn't just go to school and go to my class and then go home and then do it again.
Right.
I got up early, practice, went to school, played with my friends in between classes, any chance I could get.
Right.
I was sitting on the floor, listening to other cats' lessons, still getting more. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
You're hungry for it.
Right.
If I wasn't in school, I'd be doing the same thing.
Right. When you bring an artist in with your combo of people that you're playing with, how does that work? Like,
yeah.
You know, if you select a piece of music, are you guys reading music? How much of it is reading music and improvisation? And where is that yeah. balance? How does that work when you're playing with somebody maybe you've never played with before?
Right. So I like to look at it as us learning. We've all learned musical stories or songs that we can all riff on. And there's a language within that we can speak. Just like how we do now, where we take turns. If you agree with me, they can't see this, but you'll shake your head. We have good eye contact.
Right.
Things like that happen on stage that makes the music flow.
Right.
Just like our conversation. So we take, for example, we all know Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Sure.
They're done. That's the form.
Right.
That's one time. And then you do it again. So what we're doing is we make up our own melody after we present the first melody. So okay. I would take the harmony and the chord changes, and I would make up my own melody or play off of the melody
right.
that was presented, which is what I really like to do, kind of embellish the original melody. And then when you're done speaking, you just kind of look around and I'm done. You
pass the torch to somebody
else,
right?
Yeah, yeah. You can wind up your thought or phrase in a manner that even is very audible, like, oh, okay, he's almost done.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, like, right. Hey, this guy's coming to the end of what he's saying, yep. Right? Okay.
Yep.
So what do you think the future holds for Akron and jazz? And I guess, you know, how do places like Akron reach out and appeal to creative people to get them to come and live in these communities? Because we know it raises people's quality of life when you have arts and artists yeah. around. But what can a city like Akron do to attract those people, and maybe outside of, you know, you have the school here, mm-hmm. maybe, which attracts some people, but do you see that happening, and what more do you think needs to be done to kind of attract that talent and keep them here?
I really see that question being answered with industry, but not the industry and how we look at, like, the music industry in Nashville and LA and New York and New Orleans. It has to be Akron's industry, and in order for that to happen, it has to be us leading it.
Right.
So we're all at this level playing field now since the pandemic. And I see us, you know, people have still been putting out very good material like tonight, other things that I've been a part of. And we're able to reach now folks all around the world. Just right. for Jazz Fest, we reach more people than we ever have.
Right.
This past year during a pandemic, because we focused on online and went all around the world.
Right.
All those people around the world would have been tuning into other things or doing their own thing, but now they're like, Akron, Ohio. Wait, LeBron isn't the only, you know, is that? No, there's well, other things to do here. There's really cool people too. Right. <You know? laughs> So that's where I see the future for us to get
right.
people to come in. I think we have to take advantage of our bounce back. You know, don't let this time go by
and lose that opportunity.
Lose the opportunity.
What a great pair of interviews, and it seems like the future of jazz in Akron is in great hands with the Tommy Lehman Quintet and people like Theron Brown and all the others that are making their home in Akron, Ohio, and creating this great art. I asked Theron about the history of Akron jazz and some of the people they knew that influenced them, and he gave a great elegy to one of their friends named Jimmy Knoll. And Kevin Richards had asked Tommy Lehman to write a song specifically about the history of Akron jazz, and he wrote a song about Jimmy Knoll. And I'm going to let the guys in the band introduce this last performance because they speak to it better than I ever can. So enjoy the intro and this great performance of a song that you're not going to hear anywhere else from the Tommy Lehman Quintet. But speak a little bit about the history and maybe some of the people that were local legends here. He referenced a few, but tell me a little bit more about the people here that really made a name for themselves in Akron as Akronites.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorites who we're actually going to, I think Tommy wrote a song for him, and his name is Jimmy Knoll. We call him Mr. Knoll.
Okay.
And right before he passed, a few years ago, we were able to get him to play a gig with us.
Yeah.
And the Akron Life magazine did a really nice story on him and really celebrated him as an Akron legend.
Right.
And this cat could play, man. I mean, when we were on stage with him at Blue Jazz, it was me, Tommy, maybe Chris Cole, Zaire, and Jordan. Dan Wilson, I think, was on the gig. But, I mean, every note he played, it was different. It was seasoned.
Right.
You know, it was like the pot at your grandma's house that, you know, she always fries everything in or cooks her steak in.
Right.
There's all kinds of
years
good,
of flavor.
Yeah,
in there,
come like, on, man. Like when he, as soon as he played, you hear the air and the breath. It's like, oh yeah, this is coming from a different place.
Right.
You know, so he's one that I highly respect, and to hear stories from him, you know, he didn't even talk much when we got together, but when we played, that's when you could feel it. It's like, oh yeah, it lived here. It was strong. And he's speaking that to us right now.
Right. He doesn't have to say it with words.
Yeah, like, man. Everybody felt it on stage. Like, I'm getting chills thinking about it now.
Kevin asked me to write a piece, kind of like a then and now reflection on Howard Street and where we are today. And so this is my reflection on that. And it's called Mr. Knoll. And this is dedicated to Jimmy Knoll, who we just lost this past year in 2020. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy. Thank you. Rest in peace, rest in power, Jimmy Noel. Thank you so much. Thank you, man.
What an epic episode of the Roots of American Music podcast. I learned a whole bunch. I hope you did, too. I enjoyed talking to both Joe Mossbrook and Theron Brown, and we heard a lot of great music also. So visit that Facebook page, Roots of American Music. Give us a like. If you feel like donating to Roots of American Music, you can also visit www.rootsofamericanmusic.org and find the donation button on that page. I'd like to thank a whole bunch of people for this particular episode. I want to thank the Knight Foundation. I'd like to thank the GAR Foundation. I'd like to thank Roots of American Music, Jason Myers, Executive Director, and Kevin Richards, Artistic Director. I'd like to thank the crew at Akron Recording Company for live streaming and recording these performances. I'd like to thank Mike Fanos and Dave Polster with production assistance. It takes a whole team of people to make this happen, so I'm thankful for that. So stay tuned for the next episode. It looks like that's going to come out around St. Patrick's Day. So imagine what themes we could talk about in Akron, Ohio, revolving around St. Patrick's Day and the celebratory actions that ensue during that time of the year. So until then, take it easy. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book, and together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.